They figure that by 1976, they can have total control in the United States and therefore total control in the world. And they have called the various things they are doing as part of this plan their Operation 76. Party leaders and agents active in both leftist and liberal organizations the length of the country have been ordered to reverse their stand and work most diligently for the racial and religious identification of every man, woman, and child in the nation. Now, you remember, they have fought this for a long time. The last United States census that was taken, they didn't allow any mention of religion because that would have been a dead giveaway that out of the mythical 6 million Jews that Hitler never killed at all, 5 million of them were living in the United States. So, to conceal that fact, they didn't allow any question on religion to be asked. You remember that they even made it a requirement under the anti-discrimination labor laws that no employer in his employment record should state what race any particular employee was, because that might be a basis for discrimination. And that was put through by the Communist Party, getting Congress to put that in, through behind-the-scenes pressure from Jews. Now, they've been ordered to reverse this and have, in all possible records, the recording of the race and the religion of every man, woman, and child in the country as part of a personal inventory which key officials of the U.S. Census Bureau wish to have incorporated in the 1970 census. The about-face was required by the most sinister aspect of the party's new and final 10-year plan for taking the United States into the Soviet-oriented world government, dated for consummation on July 4, 1976. This aspect of the party's assigned role is giving impetus and direction to an amalgamation of organized religious bodies which Moscow has blueprinted to emerge in the early 1970s as a universal Church of World Brotherhood. Since 1920s, trained Red agents have infiltrated both the clergy and the laity to subvert the bases of faith in a divine creator and to redirect church and church-allied activities into purely social channels of a nature not hostile to communist goals. You've seen that. How many churches now are actively taking part in the mongrelization and destruction of the white race? Look at this Catholic priest, Father Gropi, who is, what is it, in Milwaukee, leading the rioters. Now, that certainly has nothing to do with religion, but he is serving his red masters. This infiltration resulted in the operational capture of the old Federal Council of Churches during the 1930s. Which has been maintained and apparently rendered permanent insofar as its successor, the National Council of Churches, is concerned. This control veered the mainstream of Protestantism to the left, giving those denominations and individual churches which remained faithful to traditional Christian precepts a stigma similar to that which like methods employed in the political sphere imparted to those remaining loyal to fundamental constitutionalism. For the most part, the Catholic Church was unaffected by these borings into the body of world Christendom, or at least seemingly so, until the passing of Pope Pius XII in 1958, after which there was evidenced a most marked and rapid deterioration in the Vatican's anti-Bolshevist resolve, which in less than a decade has seen that church transformed from an implacable foe of communism into an active and quite powerful advocate of coexistence with both Moscow and Red China. At the same time, revolutionary changes in its centuries-long teachings have moved Rome closer and closer, not to traditional Protestantism, as many Catholic laymen suppose, but to that humanistic neo-paganism of the National and World Council of Churches. The communist assault against religion has always been against the concept of deity, of God as an entity above and beyond the vicissitudes of mundane existence and human frailties, to whom man owes his first allegiance, and to whom he may and should entrust his fate, both in life and in death. Such a concept, whether held by a Protestant, a Catholic, a Jew, a Muslim, or a communicant of any other faith, poses an insurmountable obstacle to the Marx doctrine of economic determinism, the class struggle theory of history. For this reason, the world communist conspiracy has nothing to fear from a religion based on a social gospel which is itself the product of thinking in terms of the individual's helplessness in the face of mass economic forces. Indeed, communism can find in such religions invaluable allies in the quest for global empire. And if they feel the necessity for transforming God into an invisible earthly comrade, prepared to lead the masses in battle against their capitalist oppressors and keeping us as such, the Reds rightly judge that this profanation of deity is itself most useful to the Marxist cause. Then he tells how at this national convention in 1966, they adopted this plan. The plan of action is quite precise. It is geared to the creation of a single Church of World Brotherhood seated in the Holy Land by the mid-1970s. Remember now these remarks from Ben-Gurion and various other Jew leaders about how there at Jerusalem they would have in the city, which is the common holy city of the different religions, the headquarters of world religion. Sure, they're all working for the same thing, under the same command. The ultimate goal is a global state religion in which the political and church powers are one and the same. You remember they already have that in Russia. But this objective extends beyond the terminal date of Operation 76, whose blueprint in this area is restricted to fostering a domestic interfaith union of the mainstream of Protestant, Catholic, and Jewish denominations in an expanded National Council of Churches, which, by a series of guidelines to be laid down by several agencies of the federal government and later to be sustained by decisions of the U.S. Supreme Court, will, by force of law, come to include all churches, denominations, sects, and individual clergymen and evangelists legally recognized as having any right to function in the field of religion. All seeking to operate outside either the council or the guidelines will, in the earlier stages of the plan, be subjected to crippling economic disabilities and later be included under statutory and prosecutable offenses. Now, the whole basis on which the Protestant churches split off from Catholicism is a basis of fundamental doctrine, not of convenience, that they found such falsity in some Catholic doctrine that they could not with good conscience accept it. And likewise, the basis in which you have had division in the Protestant side has been that they have found certain doctrines which they must in good conscience adhere to if they are going to have any good conscience. Now, when you talk about even the Protestant churches all merging into one, it can only be done on the basis of sacrificing the integrity of their belief just to get a big organization for some political power. And when it comes to merging Catholic and Protestant, one or the other or both will have to say their most fundamental doctrines were lies and are abandoned as such, because you can't possibly reconcile them. The immediate target is the interfaith union within the expanded National Council of Churches, paralleled by similar union within the World Council of Churches, on the basis of a broadened social gospel, which will encompass, first, collaboration of church and state in fostering racial and religious integration, massive federal state anti-poverty and regionally based urban renewal programs, and the coordination and later outright control of all private, secular, and religious charitable and educational activities by the federal government. Second, the reform of religion itself to identify social commitment and the new morality of unrestrained gratification of the physical senses with the actual worship of God. So, they say this will come with a series of council pronouncements on the new faith and morals evolving as council dogmas, which will come to be binding on all member organizations. At the same time, the council, that's National Council of Churches, in collaboration with the political arm of Operation 76, will undertake to intensify the assault upon churches and individual clergy and evangelists who remain outside the council and faithful to fundamental tenets which failed to yield to the secularizing of God and his forms of worship. Now that is already underway. I think practically all of you here know of my broadcast on Radio KTYM in Englewood. But some months ago, I got a frantic SOS message from the owner of the station. They were being attacked by the National Council of Churches because they had permitted the broadcast of a program, and it's mine, which had pointed out that the churches were not teaching the fundamental truths of the Bible. It was attacking their activities, and they said that they were going to try to get the station's license canceled if any more broadcasts like this were permitted. So I got this frantic appeal to tone down that phase of my broadcasts. Now, that's directly Moscow-inspired. It's directly Moscow or Tel Aviv tactics. And the masters controlling it have hooked noses. Now, granted that their servants in the National Council of Churches who actually made the threat were probably not Jews, but it's obvious where they got their orders from. The assault will take two approaches, one frankly political, the other psychosociological. In the first, resisting churches, missions, and individual religionists will be identified with the lunatic fringe in the political area, the so-called far right, the extremists, the fascists, and so forth. In the second, the resistors will be portrayed as sick, paranoid, a menace to the mental health of both the local community and the station. The federal government will move into position, first to circumscribe, and then to render virtually unlawful the formal propagation of those religious teachings to which the National Council of Churches has objected. You see, they were hoping to use an arm of the federal government, the Federal Communications Commission, to get my program squelched. Now, the Anti-Defamation League, when they made their attack on the station's license, didn't dare mention my program in it because that would have been too obvious, Jews attacking a Christian program. So what they made the basis of their formal complaint was Richard Cotton's program because that is primarily economic and political, not religious. But when the other agency of the Anti-Defamation League, the National Council of Churches, attacks another Christian broadcast, why, that isn't a giveaway of the Jewish influence. The federal action will follow the twin formula which Operation 76 will have applied beforehand. Politically, the Internal Revenue Service will be pressured to establish guidelines for determining the tax status of religious organizations and practicing clergymen and evangelists and their contributors. These guidelines will precisely duplicate the official stand of the National Council of Churches with respect to the permitted teachings of its member groups, so that for taxing purposes, a church or religious body or religious practitioner will be defined in terms of the National Council of Churches creed of a secular God, the social gospel, and the new morality. Bodies and individuals deviating from this creed, whether NCC affiliated or not, are to be excluded from the exemption granted their income and property in previous years. Force them economically out of existence. At the same time, the National Council of Churches psychosociological thrust will be reinforced by the federal government through another executive agency, the U.S. Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, under which is operated the National Institute of Mental Health. The latter body is the one which this newsletter exposed nationally in 1959 as having considered granting $29,000 in federal tax money for the untested drug experiments on 90 normal children to be handpicked from the Montgomery County, Pennsylvania public school system. Under the present plan, as conceived in Operation 76, the National Institute of Mental Health will receive and accept recommendations from the World Health Organization, a specialized agency of the United Nations, setting forth standards for healthy mental attitudes on religion and moral conduct. As the Communist Party's Lincoln Project, exposed by this newsletter in 1956, did in drafting a voting rights bill, which was enacted by Congress 9 years later, Operation 76 fixes an advance year for the introduction of legislation supplementing these standards in the United States. The year chosen by the Kremlin's blueprinters is 1973, and the legislation presently drafted by top communist legal experts provides for compulsory observation, custodial care, and such treatment as may be indicated by the patient's condition and prescribed by competent medical authority, in cases involving individuals, quote, whose behavior, demeanor, or public utterances as an individual religious practitioner shall be such as to impair the emotional well-being of the community as defined in Article 2 of this Act. The projected legislation will be known as the National Community Health Act of 1973. The Act and its provisions dealing with individual religious practitioners would render it totally impossible for any individual religionist to continue a public ministry outside the secularized creed of the National Council of Churches, since impairing the emotional well-being of the community is defined in Article 2 as anything done in the name or on the behalf of any religious body, sect, teaching, or personal revelation, or in the pursuit of any organized or individual political objective, including the election to party or public office or nomination, therefore, which creates or is calculated to create public mistrust, fear, alarm, or panic, or which propagates social mistrust, hostility, or hatred of, toward, or for any other religious or political body. In other words, when I give you warning about the Communist Party and its activities, squarely within it. When such shall result from appeals to the superstition, the supernatural or unvalidated interpretations of religious experience of an occult order, or when otherwise unsupported by accepted religious or political usage as established by law. You remember in the days of the Roman Empire when it was established by law that you had to worship the emperors as gods? An exact parallel they're trying to set up here. The restrictions imposed by a series of federal guidelines, supplemental legislation, and supporting Supreme Court decrees buttressing the assault upon our religious and political freedoms include the psychological testing and screening of both religious leaders and candidates for political office, outright federal tax support of the National and World Council of Churches, while denying tax exemption to both religionists and contributors outside the National Council of Churches orbit. And one particular legal restraint on which we should spend a paragraph. At this writing, agents operating within the World Ecumenical Movement have initiated the preparation of an authorized version of the Holy Bible, which by 1972 is to supplant the Douay version in all Roman Catholic churches and the Revised Standard version in all Protestant pulpits allied with the National Council of Churches. This will be the first edition of an evolving world Bible, which will ultimately come to engage and reconcile all the religious beliefs of all rational 21st century mankind. In the first edition, marking the reunion of world Christendom, all divinity is to be stripped from the second person of the Godhead, with the Nazarene emerging as the historical Christ, the teacher and social reformer who met his death at the hands of the Roman political power, which viewed his work among the poor and socially oppressed as a threat to its retention of the province of Palestine. This is the story of the crucifixion, which world church Protestants and Catholics will be obliged to accept by their highest bishops, and which all churches, denominations, and individual evangelists and communicants will be compelled by law to acknowledge when, again in 1973, it will be made an offense punishable by imprisonment to publish or preach the crucifixion account as related in the Douay or the King James Version of the Scriptures. At this writing, the legislation to ban the crucifixion passages of these Bibles from print, from the pulpit, and from all other forms of communication is being agitated by the organization to which this task was assigned, the notorious Red Front, the Anti-Defamation League. The legislation itself is already in draft form, ready for introduction into Congress, well in advance of the publication of the first edition of the Evolving World Bible, in which the Anti-Defamation League is also taking an active interest. That's what they have lined up for us. Now do you see why this is not just a matter of a military attack by one nation upon another, which is going to be taken care of by merely repelling that military attack? This thing is brought to a point where nothing but total world judgment can be an answer. When you go back and look over history, and especially as it's recorded in the Bible, you see this, that every time Satan made an attack upon God's people Israel, when they were still loyal to God, when they still had their religion, the attack failed miserably because there was God's protection. And therefore, when he wanted to overthrow them, the first phase of his attack had to be to undermine their religion and lead them into apostasy, to the point where they themselves had reached a depth of wickedness which God could not protect. And then they were open to Satan's attack. Now, that's exactly the way they've got it planned here. They have been weakening us through all sorts of false religious and political doctrines taught. They have been weakening us through Comrade Commissar McNamara, who is destroying our defenses. That man is worth 200 divisions of troops to the Russians. And they will feel pretty soon that we are sufficiently softened up to be ready for the kill. Then they'll pass on to the next stage of it, the military conquest. So you find that the Bible does prophesy the military attack as part of this. For example, in Joel 3, verses 9 to 14, proclaim ye this among the nations, prepare war, wake up the mighty man, let all the men of war draw near, let them come up, beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I am strong. Notice how many little five-and-dime nations these days are threatening war on somebody. Let the weak say, I am strong. Assemble yourselves and come, all ye heathen, and gather yourselves round about. That's the enemy's plan. And Joel's getting a little bit fidgety about this time. Because he says, thither cause thy mighty ones to come down, O Yahweh. And right away he gets God's answer. Let the heathen be wakened and come up to the valley of God's judgment. For there will I sit to judge all the heathen round about. Usually they don't bother translating it. They call it the valley of Jehoshaphat. And there is no valley of that name, and never was, around Jerusalem. It isn't a specific place. This is the judgment on the entire world. He says, now, get together here for this place of God's judgment. Put ye in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come, get you down, for the press is full. The vats overflow, for their wickedness is great. Remember how much the book of Revelation has to say right along this very same thing? That he saw one sitting upon a cloud like unto the Son of Man and having a sharp sickle. And an angel said, put in thy sickle and reap, for the harvest of the earth is ripe. And he did. Then there was another angel brought out with a sharp sickle, and he was told, reap the vine of the earth. And he did so, and he cast it into the winepress of the wrath of God. Now that's what this is connecting up with here. Put ye in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come, get you down, for the press is full, the vats overflow, for their wickedness is great. Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision. For the day of Yahweh is near in the valley of decision. Now you remember in Jesus Christ's parable about the farmer who planted a field with good seed, and then his enemy came along and sowed tares, those poisonous weeds, darnel, in among it. And his servants came to him and said, sir, should we root out these weeds right now? And he said, no, you'd root up some of the wheat with it if you did this now. Wait until the harvest. Then the reapers will gather the tares into bundles to be burned and gather the wheat into my barn. And as he explained it to his disciples later, the harvest is the end of this age. The reapers are the angels who are sent to carry out God's judgment here. The tares are the children of the wicked one. And you remember he identified those in the 8th chapter of the Gospel of John. Again, you will find in the 25th chapter of Jeremiah, verses 31 to 33, a noise shall come even to the ends of the earth. For Yahweh hath a controversy with the nations. He will plead with all flesh. Now, that word plead has been used commonly to mean a sort of whining and begging and so on. That's not the sense in which that word is used there. In connection with a court and a trial, it's a different thing.
That is all that we have time for. Pastor Comparé will complete this message on his next cassette.